In Memphis or in Nashville, a 27-year-old woman can also buy a plan for as low as $58 a month today. On the exchange, the lowest priced plan would be $114 a month. So, okay. This is supposed to be cheaper, better, and make it more affordable for you. I haven't seen it yet. If we are going to experience similar situations to what other people in the country, and I just happened to pull this one up on Tennessee. So today, a Nashville woman could choose from 30 different insurance plans that cost less than the administration says the insurance plans on the exchange will cost, even with the new tax subsidy. In Nashville, 105 insurance plans offered today will not be available in the exchange. That's also what we're finding. But we're also finding in New Hampshire, because of legislation that was passed under Jean Shaheen when she was governor, we only have one insurance company now, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, that is really in this exchange. It's very interesting because I've had several people tell me that they are losing, especially those people who are on who are already self-employed. So they're small businesses. They're being told by their insurance companies that they need to find another insurance company because, by the way, they're not going to be insuring in New Hampshire next year, or after October 1st. So, you know, when you're doubling and tripling these premiums, it doesn't sound like it's the best thing for us. And as a military dependent, a military mom, let me tell you about government run health care. It's fine when we were on the military bases and you had military doctors who were, a lot of these guys were doing their residency in, or they even stayed beyond their residency. But one of the things that doctors found was when you come out of med school and you have to go in for your residency of about a year, you're really living at the poverty line. And it's really, really tough if you've got a family. And a lot of these guys, by the time you get through education and so forth and you become a doctor with that big MD behind your name, or DO, as the case might be, and you go into your residency, you're really scraping pennies together, and you may have a family by that time. So many times what medical doctors found was, or graduates found, was that doing your residency in the military was a great advantage because, number one, you were an officer. Number two, you got paid officer pay, just like everybody else, and your hours weren't unreasonable. You actually had a 40-hour week compared to an 80-hour week that you might have outside. Well, we had some very excellent medical doctors who were active duty members of the military when my husband was in the military, and many times they provided decent care. You did run across a couple of doctors that were maybe didn't meet the standards that you would have liked, but for the most part, most of the doctors were pretty decent. However, on the government-run subsidized health care that you would have or you would encounter if you lived off of a military base, or if you were in a remote area, or if you were a retiree. At one time it was called CHAMPUS. Today it's called TRICARE. Those doctors operate on the lowest bidder. So you can imagine there are the top-notch doctors don't necessarily want to deal with the government who doesn't pay on time or who may have some issues with how you code it, etc. And we're starting to run into that now in today's situation with Medicare and Medicaid. You can come across some situations where they don't, the insurance company won't pay, or the doctors aren't getting paid, or they're being paid less than they would normally get paid if they were to do this on their own. So that's some of the problems that we're going to face with Obamacare if it is fully funded. Another thing that I think we need to also consider and talk about is the fact that, you know, what about those people who decide that they don't want the middleman? Do you ever think about that, that the insurance company is really a middleman? And many times in business or when we're dealing with things, sometimes you want to buy from the broker, the person that's in between. But a lot of times people exercise their right to go directly to the source and make a decision a buying decision when you're talking directly with the person who is providing that service or who is making that item. We oftentimes will get rid of the middleman because it saves us dollars. So I was talking to a lady who said that's exactly what she does. She takes the money that she would normally pay for an insurance company, a middleman, and puts it into the bank and saves that in a special account. When she has a medical situation in her family, she goes to the doctor of their choice, and if that doctor were to prescribe an x-ray or a blood panel, she would then go to various providers of that service and she would ask them, okay, what is your going rate? Well, for example, the one that I know most well is this lady had a child who needed an MRI. So she went, called various places around in the state of New Hampshire, and the prices vary dramatically. She got bids from $800 to $4,500. Quite a big difference. So where do you think she went? She went to the one where it was the most efficient use of her money in her opinion. But she had the freedom to make that decision. Under Obamacare, you will not have that freedom. You will have to buy your medical health care insurance, and you will have to employ a middleman, and you will have to have insurance, or you will pay a penalty. That's part of the big problem. Now, the other thing that we keep hearing in all of this Ted Cruz filibuster cloture situation is that the government's going to shut down. You hear that from Harry Reid. Do you want to chance, do you want to risk the fact that the government would shut down? Well, let me talk to you about what it means for the government to shut down, because in reality, it's a big boogeyman in the closet. It's the big elephant in the room nobody's talking about. If we were to have a government shutdown, it's not the whole government shutdown. It's part of the government that shuts down. It's like one-third of it. It's the discretionary spending. It is not the mandatory regular spending that would cease to exist. So here's some of the things that would happen. What about your travel and your transportation? Well, the air traffic control would continue, and there would continue to have the airport and airplane safety inspections. The highway administration activities would also continue. In 2011, one of the contingency plans for the Department of Transportation was that 17,870 of the 58,011 employees would be furloughed. That's just 17 or 18,000 out of 58. Amtrak's trains would continue to run. When they had the shutdowns in 1995 and 1996, they about 20 to 30,000 foreign applications for visas went unprocessed every day, and 200,000 for the for U.S. applications for passports weren't processed, but those were delays. It impacted our tourist industries and our airline industries, but they were just delays. And the essential part of air travel continued on. Would you be able to get a passport? Well, you might run into some complications, but so you might want to go ahead and start the process now in case that there were something. But, you know, emergency visa services do continue. And while they curtail the normal process, if you have an emergency, you can still get a visa and you can still get a passport. What about national security? Agencies that function that protect national security and ensure human safety are exempt from the shutdown. Military operations, border security, coastal protections, including the Coast Guard, law enforcement, criminal investigations, counterterrorism efforts, and the care of your prisoners and are all going to continue. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Secret Service, and the Marshals Service will all continue to function. The Transportation Security Administration will continue to staff its airports. What about if government workers, if they're furloughed, do they get their retroactive pay? That's up to Congress to determine whether or not they're going to furlough the employees with pay. But that's something that could impact you. Do you get your mail? Of course. Mail continues to flow. Well, what about Social Security and the other benefits? Social Security payments will continue to go out, and the administration is expected to continue taking applications for benefits as they were outlined in the 2011 contingency plan. What about public health? Is public health going to be endangered because there's no longer going to inspect the foods and so forth? The Food and Drug Administration will continue to review imports into the United States, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. Inspection of meat, poultry, and egg products is expected to continue because these fall under the category of human safety. In previous shutdowns, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention ceased their disease surveillance, which could be problematic in the flu season, but maybe not, you know, because, I can go on to my microbiology degree and start talking about the flu and what happens during flu season, but and where they get the flu vaccine, but that's for another discussion at another time. But it's interesting that the medical care of inpatients and emergency outcare patients continue. The handling of hazardous waste, disaster assistance, and power grid maintenance will continue. The Department of Labor is expected to continue responding to workplace injury and child labor incidents. The Employee Benefits Security Administration will continue to function. Labor will also continue to their mine inspections and their workplace safety inspections and their training efforts. The Environmental Protection Agency is studying plans that were done under the prior shutdowns, but in general terms, the lack of a budget would first force some furloughs. It would mean that the EPA effectively would shut down. That might not be a bad deal, because EPA was supposed to get us cheaper gas, I think, and gas has gone up, what, from $1.87 when this administration took effect. So government workers, in 1995, the shutdown lasted for 5 days and resulted in 800,000 federal employees being furloughed. But it was estimated that 284,000 federal workers were furloughed and 475,000 federal employees worked under non-pay status, meaning that they received back pay once the shutdown was concluded. So many of the federal employees are exempted from furloughs, such as President Obama, Congress, and all of the presidential appointees. Now, the president has appointed a whole lot of people. I don't know if that also applies to the czars that he appointed, but I would imagine since he did those under executive order or something else, I'm not sure how he accomplished all of those. But, you know, those things would continue. Those people would continue to work. The judiciary would continue to function even though we have a shutdown. The national parks were closed in the last, or at least 368 of the National Park Service's sites were closed. And that impacts the number of visitors that you have to those sites. Maybe that's one of the reasons we shouldn't have national forests, is because you can't go and enjoy the sites anyway. But if something goes wrong. National Securities and Exchange Commission is expected to continue emergency law enforcement and litigation, market monitoring and surveillance, and internal functions, in addition to its filing system. Oh, wow. We wouldn't want to miss out on keeping track of you people. The Smithsonian Institution and the National Zoo would both close. But then the White House is closed to tours, as I understand it anyway, but you know, maybe they lifted that. I'm not sure. but at any rate, you see, the Veterans Affairs, the agency said that in its 2011 plan that 97% of its workers would be exempted from the shutdown and most of their services would continue. So, friends, I don't know if you understand like I understand, but it sounds to me like the threat of a government shutdown is not a big deal. It is more a threat to you and more of a something to instill an emotion in you, the public, and to say to you, you ought to be afraid, because if we really make this decision to be responsible in our spending and to really care about the American public, many of those whom Senator Ted Cruz was talking about when he, if you listen to his 21-hour-long speech, he didn't just talk about green eggs and ham, or he didn't just talk about some of the one or two of those things. He spent a lot of time talking about the common man, the man on the street who was facing some real problems. Because some people have already started to experience some increases and some challenges in their everyday lives with this Affordable Care Act that was actually rammed through Congress, because it was, remember, Nancy Pelosi standing up there and saying, we have to pass this and then you can find out what's in it. That is not what our legislators and our congressmen and our state representatives and our federal representatives are elected to do. We elect them to represent us, and we expect them to read the material that is presented in front of them so they can be making the educated decisions. Yes, there are some moral decisions in there that we hope that they would make the moral choice, but ultimately, we want them to look at both sides of the argument and decide what would be best for the American people. Who is going to be impacted the most, and how do we make it the best situation for our American people? Again, I told you I would give you the numbers in order to be able to call senators, your senators on this particular vote coming up in front of U.S. Senate. That is the vote for cloture. Would you end the debate, or would you expect them to continue to talk about this and quit running away from it, for heaven's sakes? Callie Ayotte is at 202-224-3121. 202-224-3324, 202-224-3324. Senator Jean Shaheen is at 202-224-2841, 202-224-2841. And before I let you go, let me talk about one more government program that is just outrageous and something that we, the people, can do something about, and that is the funding of school. The big debt that our college graduates are walking out the door with. And we as parents, we as students, need to be thinking about what the government's offering you in those student loans. Those student loans are there forever. They will not take into consideration the fact that you might have a physical problem, that you get sick or you have an accident. They will not take into consideration that you lost your job and that you can't repay them. They will not take into consideration that that you've gone bankrupt, that you've even filed bankruptcy, because you can't. You will always have that student loan until you pay it back. Now, there are many, many people out here, and I have several friends whose children have $100,000 worth of student loan debt. $100,000. And what are they capable of earning? Most of them are in that $20,000 to $30,000-$40,000 range. If you think it's not going to be a burden for a long, long time, while that student loan, as low as that interest rate might be, keeps chugging along and adding that interest rate to it every month, if you've only got $30,000 a month and you can't even afford to put a dollar towards the running of this country, because I've heard that argument as well, how do you think you're going to pay off $100,000 worth of debt? It's just absolutely insane. You can, and many times these debts are incurred because Johnny or Susie wants to go to the best college. Well, you know what? UNH is a great college. The New Hampshire Technical Institute is a great college. When I went to school, I went to the junior college first for 2 years, stayed at home, paid a minimal amount of money for that education, and then I went to a state school where my education would not be breaking the bank for my parents, and I also worked all the way through school. I had a job with the school or during the summers, away from the school, where I saved my money and I paid for a certain amount of it. And my parents and I worked out a deal. They happened to pick up my tuition and my books while I paid for my living expenses. But, you know, I also know there are many out here, some of our people who have run for office before, who have held down a full-time job and gone to school at night until they got their degree out of the way. They are not any less well educated than somebody that went to a very expensive school like Harvard, Yale, or whatever, because you were going for the big name, or going out of state, because when you go out of state, you incur that out of state tuition penalty. And you know, it's time that we as parents start to say to our young people, you know what? Maybe it's not time for you to go to college. Maybe we need to defer it. Maybe if you want to go to college, maybe we need to go to school here in the state so that you're not incurring those big debts. It's absolutely insane. And if we're doing that at home, no wonder our government is now on a credit card and spending just out of sight. It's now estimated that there will not be an opportunity for us to get out of the debt that we've got going before us. Just go up to usdebtclock.org and look at the numbers. It's absolutely incredible. Every one of us right now, every man, woman, and child is incurring something like a $50,000 debt a year that we can't pay. It's absolutely ridiculous. We can't pay that. And so unless we get our spending under control, we are not going to make any progress. And so it's going to start at home, because I don't know if you realize it or not, but that home is the very first and the simplest government that's going on. That's where you spend, you budget, you learn to contribute. You know, it's not all there for somebody else to take care of you. I don't know about your mom, but my mom never sat there and said, I'll make your bed every morning for you, and I'll brush your teeth for you, and I'll make sure that you get anything that you want, and I'll do it all for you, because otherwise I'm not learning how to be personally responsible. And that's really what it's all about, personal responsibility. And so, friends, let's be serious and let's look at what we're doing with our young people as well as with our state and our nation. We cannot continue to operate at a deficit. We need to be conscientious. We need to do what is the right thing. So call your senators. Kelly Ayotte is 202-224-3324. Senator Jean Shaheen is 202-224-2841. We do not want them to stop discussing and debating this issue. The people need to be considered and taken care of. This has been Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths, sponsored by First Principles of New Hampshire on WSMN 1590, Nashua's source of news and talk. We'll see you next Monday at 10 o'clock.